I'd like to again put item one on hold momentarily. And if we can go to item two, approval of the meeting minutes, the September 15th virtual meeting. What's the trustees' pleasure on that? And could I have you identify yourself and then indicate your choices for vote?
This is Kathy, so moved.
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Petrosimone, second.
Is there discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, please indicate your vote, your preference by name.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Zane Gary, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye. I'm sorry. Jerry Stagnella, aye. Okay, if we can go on to, let's see, put item three on hold for a moment. Try to do some of the perfunctories. Age annuity, rule of 80, early retirement. That's information only. Does not require the deliberation or the vote of the trustees. Is there a question on item four that the trustees like that answered? If not, we can go on to item five, conditional member retirement. Again, information only, does not require the trustees' deliberation or vote. As I've indicated before to the trustees, a conditional membership is a person who's leaving employment with the city that's a member of the fund who does not have any available retirement, any retirement options available to him or her. And they have opted to defer a retirement entitlement by leaving their employee contributions in the fund, and they can receive a benefit at age 65 that is without a penalty applied to it, or they can opt to receive the pension up to 10 years earlier at age 55 with a offsetting early retirement penalty. So this individual, Marion DeMonaco, has opted to leave employment with the city, become a conditional member, leave her contributions, employee contributions in the fund, and at age 55, she will receive a benefit calculated with a appropriate early retirement penalty of 10 years. Are there any questions on that? Item number six, contribution withdrawals, information only. I believe that's pretty self-evident, unless again, there we will entertain any questions that the trustees may have on it. Item seven, death after retirement, information only. And again, if I can ask the trustees if they can observe a moment of silence for the repose of their souls. Rest in peace. Thank you very much. Item eight, service-connected disability retirement. There's a report from a Yale Occupational on Donald Walker, cafeteria worker at the Board of Education. It's up to the trustees, based on our medical consultant's evaluation of the injury that she has sustained. I think it's a pretty compelling rendition of where she stands at this point in time after surgeries. Will the trustees entertain a vote as to whether she's entitled to a disability retirement?
Mr. Chair, I have one question. Is this the third and final that we're doing right now for Ms. Walker? The third and final approval?
This is Leanna. This is actually her first.
Okay.
Yes, she just retired in June.
All right. She's I see.
Okay. That my question was, didn't she just retire? But now she's going to service disability retirement versus regular retirement.
The age annuity is something that happens immediately. And that's not uncommon that if somebody thinks they're entitled to a disability, that takes more time because of medical evaluations, examinations. So it's not uncommon for someone to opt to take the age annuity, which is an immediate thing if they're eligible for it, and then pursue the disability after that date.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Petrosimone. I will move for approval of item 8.
This is Kathy Graves. I'll second it.
Okay. Is there discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion being properly made and second, I would like the trustees to cast their vote through identification.
This is Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Dustin Milliker, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Mario.
Jerry Sagnella, aye. Motion carries. Item 9, payment of bills. What's the board's the trustees' pleasure on item 9?
This is Kathy Graves. I'd like to ask a question. And I think it relates to something else that we're going to discuss later as a result of an overpayment. So can we defer I'll move that we approve item 9A. And upon discussion of the overpayment of the pension contribution. So I move that we approve item 9A.
Okay.
Because I'd like to discuss B.
Is there a second to Kathy's motion?
I second Kathy's motion, Mario Zangari.
Okay. Is there discussion on this on the motion? The absence of a motion and properly made in second. The trustees indicate their choice of vote through a name identification.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zangari, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Justin Milliker, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Jerry Sagnella, aye.
Excuse me, it's Carolyn Cohn, chairwoman. I just don't, Trustee Graves indicated there was going to be a discussion on one of the payments, but I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. Item 3B, it does not have to 9B. Do that.
9B.
I beg your pardon, can you say it again, Carolyn?
So maybe I can ask Trustee Graves which item she thought would be relevant to the discussion of the bills.
9B, administrative.
No, that
the reimbursement, the refund on the ERA.
Right. So item 3B does not relate to that. Is that the item?
Item 9B.
9B.
Well, so. This is Justin Elliker. If I can move item 9B and then we can have a discussion on it. So I'd like to move item 9B.
9B.
Motion made to move item 9B.
Carolyn, are you sure what we're talking about?
I don't see item 9B on my agenda, but maybe I'm.
It's under itemized bill payments. Okay. It's something that you're going to discuss. It's attached to your invoice.
Oh, this is Leanna. It has nothing to do with Carolyn. There's nothing that is to be discussed. That's a separate bill.
Okay, so this isn't the refund contribution discussed that's attached to Carolyn's bill invoice? Then that's my confusion. I'll second Justin Elliker's motion to approve B. I was confused. I thought it related to something on the invoice that Carolyn sent us.
No, I'll clarify. A is separate from B. So A is Carolyn's Brenner, Salzman, and Wallman bill, and B right. I was contacted by payroll, the payroll department, that a SURF employee had been improperly having pension contributions coming out for the past 2 years instead of Social Security, because they were from special fund, not general fund. So we need to direct, you know, Raymond James to pay back that pension contribution, those pension contributions.
Okay. All right. I was confused.
I'm sorry, Lena. I didn't quite understand that. Can you explain that again?
Sure. I was contacted by the payroll supervisor that there was an employee, Rosa Melendez, who I believe her position is a special fund, not a general fund, and special fund members do not contribute to pension. Instead, they have Social Security taken out. And for whatever the case, she was having pension contributions taken out, not Social Security, for the past 2 years. So those pension contributions then go, you know, over to Raymond James. So we need to direct them to have those pension contributions paid back to the city, so the city can then take out her Social Security and then refund her any amount that is left over.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the mayor, you made a motion and Kathy second that on review of an item. Is there any discussion on this motion? If not, can we have a vote to entertain the mayor's motion? If you can identify yourself through name and what your voting choice is, I appreciate it.
Justin Elker, yes.
Kathy Graves, yes.
Susan Edstone, aye.
Sorry, Sue. Mark Pedrosimone, aye.
Mario Zingari, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Jerry Signal, aye. You can continue.
Okay.
Is there going to be discussion on this motion?
No, that was the approval to pay.
That was the approval of the what?
To pay.
The pay?
Yeah.
Is that the motion you made, Mayor? To entertain?
Yeah, to pay item 9B.
Okay, fine.
Correct.
That carries.
To approve the payment.
Okay. The motion carries. If we can return to the agenda and go on to administrative matters. A report by class action counsel. Can you elaborate on that, Carolyn?
This is Leanne. I'm actually going to have Nancy Kalesa join the Zoom now for her to do a short presentation.
Okay. Are they going to present?
Good morning, Nancy. You're on mute.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Very good. Shall I begin?
Yes, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, all. Thank you for having me this morning. My name is Nancy Kalesa. I'm a partner with the law firm of Blykemar Fonte and Auld. You retained us some time ago to monitor your securities portfolio. And by that, I mean to monitor your investments for any pending litigation or new litigation and in cases that have settled to file claims for you. So I just wanted to report today on the progress of that endeavor. Basically, since you've retained us, we have collected all of your data from inception with your current custodian, which is First State. And that data goes back to August of 2014. The prior data resides with Northern Trust. So for any cases that predate that, we've been working with Northern Trust to make sure that either claims are filed or that we get the data so that we can file claims for you. First, to report on new litigation, in the second quarter of 2021, there are no new cases that impact your fund. So that's actually good news. No news is good news in this case. And actually, I can say for the third quarter, which we will be reporting on shortly, I do not believe there are any new litigations that impact your fund. There are several settled cases that do impact you. And in those cases, we have either filed claims on your behalf or filed placeholders where we don't have the data and then worked with Northern Trust to ensure that those claims are filed. So one such case is actually MetLife, and that case does predate our involvement, or it predates the data we have from First State. So we filed a placeholder claim for you there. Then we went back to Northern Trust, worked with them, and they were able to file the claim with the old data. I believe that case covers the 2010 to 2011 time period. There was one other case that we worked with Northern Trust to get filed, and that's Wells Fargo. That's a case involving data going back to 2012. We filed a number of other claims for you, one being Trinity Industries, one being Endo International, one being Valiant Pharmaceuticals, another called New Oriental Education and Technology. Those were all in the second quarter. We did file two additional claims for you in the third quarter, Portland General Electric and Gelled Wen Holdings. So you will be receiving most likely funds in connection or recoveries in connection with all of those claims. So basically, that's it for the cases and for the settlements. If anyone has any questions, I would be happy to respond to them.
Nancy, you just mentioned listed certain claims that are being filed on the fund's behalf. Do you have an estimate as to what the claim amount of losses are to the fund for those claims?
It's hard to say. There is a plan of allocation. For the last two that were filed this quarter, I do. The Gelled Wen Holdings case, I believe the estimated recovery is $717.60. For Portland General Electric, it's much less. I believe that's about $36. And for the earlier claims, I don't have an estimate right in front of me because those claims have data from, you know, pre-2014. I could probably provide that for you. Those may be a little harder to ascertain, but I could probably look into that and see if I actually, you know what? For a couple of those, I do. For Trinity Industries, I believe the estimated recovery is $175. For New Oriental, I think it's $178. For the others, I don't have calculations. So, you know, some of them are small in the, you know, hundreds. You know, I think the largest recovery you have so far is the Gelled Wen, that's $717. But I will see if I can report on the other three or four with the earlier data. And sometimes it's just the way the plan of allocation is. You can't actually estimate it until the funds are received. But I will get back to you on the other four and see if I can find out what the recovery would be.
Thank you. What is the average that the judge is allowing the attorneys to take in recovery of the lost assets? Is it 25%?
Sure. Yeah, well, that really varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and based on the judge and the district. It's capped at 33 1/3. I would say the average is closer to 20%, in some cases 25%. But really, the attorneys, with the permission of the lead plaintiff, have to apply for fees based on the time and expenses that they put into the case. And they're pretty stringent, you know, requirements as to, you know, per district, what that might be. So usually what we're seeing is about 20%, 25%. Some cases you litigate, you know, almost into trial or to trial. And in those cases, there's more lodestar, obviously, than a case that settles early on.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Well, thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate your presentation. And hopefully, as you indicated before, you're not going to have a lot to report to us.
Let's hope not. If we do, we'll be there, and we'll be providing third quarter updates shortly. I think you should have that within the next couple of weeks.
Well, it's a good thing that, you know, we have somebody that's watching our little nefarious miscreants at times.
Good. Happy to do it. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have item B, which is calls for an executive session for discussion. Would the board like to continue on this item for C and D and then go to executive session at the end of item three? Or do you prefer to go into the executive session now and then come out of that and continue with item C and D? Whatever the trustees prefer. Leave it alone?
Let's just follow the agenda.
Okay. If we can have a vote to go into executive session on item B.
So moved.
Isn't the chair indicating who should stay in the executive session?
I beg your pardon?
This is Carolyn Cohn. Can the chair indicate who other than the trustees can stay, you're inviting into the executive session? Attorney Strother will be presenting this, and so, you know, the staff and your counsel, if you wish to include them, that needs to be in your motion.
Okay. Leanna, can we just move into a separate room for executive session?
We're going to, but it needs to be said who's going to go into that room.
Okay. Jerry?
I was asking for a trustee to make the motion, but that's no problem. I thought usually that the chair does not make motions, Carolyn.
Oh.
No, the chair can make a motion, but we need to have whoever makes the motion say who will be invited into the executive session.
Right, so I'm going to make a motion to entertain item B, an executive session. And I would like to have legal counsel in the room for that discussion. And is there any, Leanna, as far as staff in the room also? That's my motion.
We have to start with the trustees should be in the meeting. Carolyn and who else?
Jack Strother and Leanna should be in the meeting, and Taylor. Taylor should be in the meeting as well.
All right, that's the motion. Is there a second to my motion?
This is Kathy Graves, I'll second.
Okay, second. Is there a discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, can the trustees indicate their vote choice by name recognition?
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Justin Elliker, aye.
Jerry Sagnella, aye. Is Mike still available? Okay, motion carries. We will now officially.
Okay, I think everybody has rejoined, Jerry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. On item 3B. Entertain a motion.
Mr. Zagnella, I have a motion to resolve that SURF will apply to the IRS's voluntary correction program for permission to retroactively and prospectively amend the language in the plan to provide that a disability benefit for a retiree who enters SURF after age 40 will be calculated on the basis of the higher of 1, the retiree's last budgeted pay, or 2, the average earnings over the best 5 years. I've also put the language in the chat.
Is there a second to that motion?
This is Kathy Graves, I'll second.
Is there discussion on that motion?
Mr. Segnell, I was just going to ask if the attorneys could just give some context for the public for the motion.
Sure. Jack and Carolyn, both.
Jack, can you do that? You're on mute. Do you want me to do it?
Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, I just unmuted here. This would be some sort of public announcement that this is happening, Mayor.
Just summarize for the public why we're have this motion before us. This is Carolyn.
Okay, that the board, upon review of past practice with the computation of certain disability benefits for employees hired after age 40, decided to conform the plan to the longstanding practice of computing those benefits on the basis of a best 5-year average, if that turns out to be greater than the final budgeted pay. And to have, if you want to add, and to have that change approved specifically by the Internal Revenue Service.
Thank you, Jack. All right, a motion has been made, it's been seconded. Is there any further discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and seconded, can the trustees vote, indicate what their vote is on the issue by name? Identification?
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Justin Ellicott, aye.
Mario Zangari, no.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Mario Zangari, nay.
Jerry Segnell, aye. Right, the motion carries. If we can go on to item 3C, discussion on financial reports, monthly versus quarterly. At the last meeting, an issue arose where it was being discussed whether it was necessary to continue to have the deep dive that we currently have monthly on the financial report presented by our financial consultant, as opposed to such a deep dive done on a quarterly basis, but the reports would still be coming on a monthly basis to the trustees for their review. And again, with the clear understanding that any issue of concern to the trustees as fiduciaries to the fund, the financial consultants could bring that up at any time for the trustees to be aware of and be brought to their attention. We indicated that we would have the trustees think about it and try to get some additional information for the today's meeting for the trustees to determine if they wanted to pursue that and have a report provided to them on a monthly basis and have a deep report analysis done by the trustees on a quarterly basis. So that's where we are today for the trustees to determine which avenue they would rather pursue. Continue with the present, at the present avenue, or to explore the possibility of going to a comprehensive report done on a quarterly basis by the financial consultants.
So just for clarity, the consultants would attend our meetings quarterly and just provide us with a monthly update.
That could be whichever the trustees want to pursue.
No, I'm just asking a question for clarity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying the report would be at minimum what the board would be, the trustees would be provided on a monthly basis. And there would be a required analysis done by the financial consultants on a quarterly basis. Now, if you wanted, in addition to the report on a monthly basis, still have the financial consultants present at the meeting for an immediate question to be answered, that's up to the trustees to determine if they're going to pursue that.
So going back to clarity on the proposal, is just get a monthly report and then have the consultants come quarterly to give us more details?
I'd say
what's going on in the fund, is that correct? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, Kathy, at minimum, I would think that's what the trustees are asking for here.
Okay, I'm just trying to get clarity.
Sure. If I can ask Derek, with your other clients you have, do they have a similar process where your reports would be, where your analysis would be in depth on a quarterly basis?
Yes, that's very common.
And at the normal monthly meetings, is the presence of the financial consultants required?
No, but I mean, we're happy to do so. It's whatever this board wants, we will certainly, be happy to oblige. So we can email you the reports in advance so you have them and come in quarterly and do a more, detailed market commentary. We can be here monthly for you if you'd like and not really do the deep dive. I mean, we could do whatever you'd like.
Well, I can force
Jerry, I have a question. What's the rationale for this change?
I think it might be in some cases due to time consumption, just as one indication of what it might be. And again, it's not that this is going against the industry practice. This is a pretty common thing with other pension plans. But again, I would feel more comfortable if the financial consultants were available at each monthly meeting, because I'm sure that if the trustees get the report, there's going to probably be a question or questions from the trustee that they're going to want to have answered at the meeting. It's up to the trustees.
I'm actually comfortable with a monthly report and the consultants come in quarterly to do a deep dive.
I agree with Kathy. I'm satisfied with that.
All right, then, can we entertain a motion?
I'd like to move that we receive monthly reports and the investment consultants come in quarterly to give us a deeper dive into the status of the fund.
And Kathy,
I second that motion.
Would that also be to have the financial consultants available at the monthly meetings?
Well, if we have questions, but they don't have to attend the meetings.
Okay, that's a motion. Is there a second?
Mario seconded.
Seconded, okay. Is there discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion been properly made, will the trustees indicate their vote by name identification?
This is Kathy Graves, aye.
Mario Zangari, aye.
Susan Whetstone, nay.
Jerry Sagnell, aye. Mark, did you vote? And Michael?
I'm sorry, I had issues with audio. Aye.
Okay, well, the motion carries. Thank you. Item 3D, discussion of investment guidelines of alternatives.
So, Chair, this is Carolyn Cohn. Before we get there, did you intend to skip item C?
Did I skip item C?
Yes, you did. This is Carolyn.
3C?
3C, update on new investments, big two and red brick, because we need a motion on that.
Is this an amended? I thought I got this as an amended agenda. Leon, is this an amendment? Did you have two agendas, one that came out and then one that was amended that was issued yesterday?
No, there's just been one agenda that I sent out to all the trustees. I think it was Monday afternoon. You might have gotten, because I always send to you as the chair, the draft one the Friday before. So maybe you're reading off of the draft one, but the final one was sent on Monday.
All right, then we'll proceed with the item C, which is... what was that item C, Carolyn?
Update on new investments, Big Two and Red Brick Opportunity Fund Two, approval of indemnification clause for Red Brick. And right. Jack would be presenting that.
Jack, can you take the lead on that while I get my other agenda?
Okay. You may recall that the board approved new investments in Red Brick Opportunity Fund Two and in Big Real Estate Fund Two. Those investments have proceeded to the point with Red Brick, where we have agreed with Red Brick and its counsel on some changes to their regular limited liability company documents that would make it more SURF friendly. And all those issues are now resolved. We have full access to Connecticut courts instead of District of Columbia or Delaware courts. We have application to the extent possible of Connecticut law, except on matters internal to the limited liability company in Delaware. We have a limitation on the indemnification clause that we're about to get to. And we also have just about, for the first time, I think, just about complete freedom in responding to Freedom of Information Act requests. You know, these usually limited partnerships, in this case with Red Brick, an LLC, always try to put restrictions on how you respond to Freedom of Information if you're a public entity. They want to make you tell them first before you disclose any of their investment secrets. They want to perhaps make you oppose any Freedom of Information request if they don't like it, and cooperate with them in doing so, etc. This creates a hodgepodge. We have been working for the last few years of getting rid of these restrictions in favor of being able to respond to Freedom of Information as we see fit and not have to go to needless appeals to the Freedom of Information Commission or even to the courts to try to protect the partnership's investment secrets when it's of no particular value to the fund to expend that time and money. So with Red Brick, we've got that total freedom on that score. And that brings us to the indemnification clause. It is the longstanding policy of the board that before agreeing to any contractual provision whereby SURF would indemnify third parties, that the board first specifically approve it. And I think you have in your handout the indemnification clause from the side letter that's been negotiated. And that contains what I would call the Mario Amendment. That's the addition of the word solely, that we won't reimburse for whatever the limited partnership or the LLC agreement says we should indemnify for, unless it's solely the fault of SURF because of a misrepresentation or breach of some kind in the agreements that we've entered into. So I will ask your approval of that indemnification clause in red brick in a moment. First, I'll briefly touch on Big Two. We have also proposed some more surf-friendly changes to Big Two. They are still chewing on it. The ball is in their court as of this morning to respond to our proposed changes. They're a little slower, I think, because we had Big One and we've tightened the screws a little bit in the last few years of trying to get more for surf. So they are yet to get back to us. So we're asking you to approve the indemnification clause in Red Brick. We're all ready to go on that one. It's cleared legal. And you need to approve or not the indemnification clause. We would ask that you approve it with one final tweak, and that is we would like to get rid of the statement at the lead into that clause about it being that SURF is a public pension plan of the state of Connecticut. That creates some confusion as to whether this is state-sponsored or not, which it is not, and there would be implications to that. So we would like you to approve this indemnification clause subject to removal of the first part of the first sentence up to the comma and just get right to what's being agreed rather than explaining the reason for it. So we would ask the chair to entertain a motion to approve the indemnification clause subject to removal of the reference to Connecticut law at the outset of that clause. That's it.
Well, question, Jack, because this has come up before, where my question is the public funds, it's not an unusual thing for them to get involved with investments, alternative type investments that have that type of language in there that seems to be very restrictive as to what they can release, what information and data they can release, which rubs against the grain of what the Freedom of Information Act is for public funds. My question is, since many public funds enter these type of agreements with these alternatives, has there ever, to your knowledge, been a case where the an alternative investment has brought a public fund to court over that issue? I mean, I would think
this is Carolyn. I'll try to answer that. Alkeon has not. We have not had a case, and I'm a member of the National Municipal or Governmental Pension Lawyers Fund, and I haven't seen that come across. But that doesn't mean it's never come across in the United States. Alkeon has threatened not to bring us to court, but to claim that there's been a breach. Because of something that was on our website, so it can be an issue, and it's very important that we not have to spend the money fighting with the investments, that they understand from the get-go that we are a public fund and we're subject to freedom of information, because the times we've had to go to the Freedom of Information Commission, which did not involve investments, were very expensive. So we don't want to get into those fights.
I was just curious how big a problem this is out there in the universe. You know, it appears that obviously we have to take care of the legalities in order to make sure this doesn't happen to us. Right. But I don't think it's such a big issue out there, because I don't think that any of these alternatives want to get a bad name with the public funds.
I could add a little more on that, Jerry. We know that it is a common problem, because many of these partnership agreements or limited liability agreements specifically mention public funds and try to make special provisions for them that we find a bit onerous, such as they will say, well, if you're a public fund and you really think you have to disclose this stuff in response to a freedom of information, we are going to cut the information you get. We're going to say that if in the judgment of the general partner, you are likely to have to disclose this, we simply won't tell you as much as we tell the other investors who are not public entities. And we object to that too, strongly. We don't think that SURF or any other public fund should be flying blind as compared with other investors and should be denied information. So then their solution is, and Red Brick Council at first proposed this, okay, well, we just won't give you the stuff in writing that we give to the private investors. We will say you can come to our office and view it, but you can't take notes or copy it. And that way you can solve your fiduciary responsibility to learn as much as you can. And we think there are all kinds of problems with that. I don't even want to go into them. But we balked at that too, and they finally, their counsel, Sherman and Sterling, used to be the biggest firm in the world, as a matter of fact, agreed that, okay, we'll just drop that entirely. We will give you the same information as the non-public investors. My point in that is, yes, it is a problem that the funds recognize that many of the public investors are going to have this problem, and we're going to try to deal with it in a way that we still don't have to give up to them information that might be discovered. And we've balked at that, and we've done so successfully in Red Brick.
Thank you, Jack. The trustees ready to make a motion on this? On item 3C.
The motion, I think, would be to approve. We still on the indemnification clause?
Yes, we are.
Yes. Approve the indemnification clause in the form presented to the meeting, subject to removal of the initial reference to Connecticut law.
I'll make a motion to approve the indemnification language, subject to, what was it, Jack?
Removal of the initial reference to Connecticut law.
And removal of the initial reference to Connecticut law.
I'll second. This is Kathy Graves. I'll second.
Motion been made. It's been second. Is there a discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, if the trustees can vote their indicate their vote preference by name identification.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Jerry Sagnol, aye. Mario?
Mario looks frozen.
Michael Gormany?
I will abstain because I had computer issues and didn't actually hear the presentation. If you see me logging in.
Mark Petrosimone?
That's Mark.
I think we lost Mark.
We lost Mark. Mario? Looks like he's frozen on the screen.
No, I'm here. I'm abstaining.
You're abstaining, okay. So let's see, Kathy, it's you and I.
And Susan.
Okay, so three votes will carry this with two abstentions. And Mark, I think, probably either left the meeting or has had some difficulty. So the motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 3F, approval of resolution amending investment guidelines alternatives. Jack or Carolyn or both?
So this is Kellen. I think this is Derek. I wrote the resolution, but Derek could present the issue.
Okay. Yeah. So if you remember from last month, we talked about your investment guidelines in the under the alternatives. It was very, very specific as far as various different types of alternative investments and the ranges and so on and so forth. So our suggestion was to amend your guidelines to look more like police and fire's guidelines, because that gave you the flexibility to be more nimble within the alternative space. So in other words, a lot of funds these days, for example, BASIS is classified as a real estate fund, but they actually don't own real estate. They own the private debt of the real estate. So it's kind of a hybrid type of fund. So in that situation, you know, where is the fund classified? So our concern was, by being very specific as the way it was originally, that could pigeonhole the fund into investing in things that are either unsuitable or untimely. Whereas if you make it more generalized, that gives the fund a little more flexibility in that space, especially because of the fact that these things are illiquid. So if there's something if the fund is forced to have exposure due to their guidelines to a certain type of fund, and now the environment is not advantageous for that sector of alternatives, you really can't do anything about it. You can't sell out of them because there really is not a secondary market for these things. So our suggestion was, let's just be more generalized: private real estate, private equity, and then hedge/other. And that way we can, obviously be more dynamic in that space and have a little more flexibility.
So this is Carolyn. If I just could add, we need to fill in, everybody should have a copy of the resolution, but the target percentage and the target ranges need to be filled in on this amended appendix one if you adopt it.
Where is the resolution? I don't seem to see it in the package I have.
Says resolution of the Board of Trustees. It was sent in separately, Susan.
Oh, that's why. Okay, I'm looking at.
No,
that's okay.
It took us a while to do this.
Yeah, the resolution I think was emailed yesterday, okay. In a separate email, or a follow up email to the original one.
Motion to accept the resolution as written.
But I think we need to, excuse me, Mario, this is Carolyn Cohn. I didn't put in the target percentage or the target ranges. I believe Derek thought it would be best for the trustees to come up with that. So before the resolution is adopted, those blanks need to be filled in.
Oh, would that require that we can't vote on this today? Require more time to come up with those numbers?
Derek, you tell us.
Sorry, hold on one second. Just trying.
So wouldn't we just remain alternatives at 2430-10?
That I did not change. This is Carolyn. We have to fill it in for those three subcategories you see on the resolution: private equity. And then we need the target for that and the target range for that, private real estate and real estate and hedge other, those two. So that those columns need to be filled in.
Well, wouldn't we just combine what's already existing? We have equity hedge, it's 6. We have private equity and real estate, 6 + 5, that would be 11. And where would managed futures go with hedge and other, 7?
Yep.
Yeah, so we leave it the same.
Can you read that to me, Kathy, again?
It's what you have above. Equity hedge would go under other. Private equity and real estate, it's already at 11.
Hedge and other.
I'm sorry, private equity. Where am I? Private equity is 6.
Okay.
Real estate is 5.
Five.
Would equity hedge and managed futures go under other, Derek?
Yes.
Okay. That would be 6 + 7.
So that's 13, 6, mm-hmm. 5, and 13, and then the ranges.
So the ranges, yeah. So the ranges, you know, we'd recommend keeping them fairly broad. So private equity 5 to 15, private real estate 5 to 15. and then others 0 to 20, because a lot falls into that other bucket.
So it's 5 to 16.
5 to 15, and then 0 to 20.
0 to 20. Okay. So that's what the motion would be.
Yeah, so we're just changing the categories, but the categories already exist. So we'll just keep them the same. Do you agree, Eric? Derek, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes.
So the motion was made. Was that motion second?
I'll second that motion. Mario's in Gary.
You made the motion, I believe.
I'll second it. This is Kathy Graves. I'll second.
Is there a discussion on this motion? So the motion properly made and second. The trustees indicate their vote by voice identification.
Kathy Graves, yes.
Mario Zingari, yes.
Susan Whetstone, yes.
Michael Gormley, yes.
Jerry Sagnoli, yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries.
This is Leanna Carolyn. Do you just need Mike Gormley to sign it?
I need to put it in its final form, and then I'll send it to Mike Gormley. This is Carolyn.
Okay.
Okay, I believe we're rushing to a conclusion. Under... Okay, I believe we're on item 10. Is there any old business that has to be transacted? Is there any under item 11? Is there any new business that has to be introduced? Then under item 12, I'd like to call up for a motion for adjournment.
And item 1A.
That's okay. Right. We started the process ahead of time, Derek.
Yeah.
You have to give us your deep dive right now.
Sure. I mean, happy to keep it brief, though. So one thing I just wanted to talk about before we get into the investment review, Leanna sent out, last month or maybe 2 months ago, we talked about large cap growth equity search. So we did perform a search. Leanna, if you could share the slides. There was many names that came up that we looked at. We searched the universe for, you know, basically what we do, just to kind of put it into perspective, when we look for an active manager in either, you know, stocks or bonds, we look for managers that consistently outperform their passive benchmark. Because if you're going to pay an active manager.
Eric?
Yes.
I've got to leave the meeting. I apologize that I can't stay to hear it. Okay, presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mario.
Thank you, Mario.
So when we look for an active manager, we look for a manager that's going to outperform their passive benchmark. So in this case, large cap growth, we utilize the Russell 1000 Growth Index. Right now we have passive and active index funds while we look for active managers. So we look for a manager that consistently outperforms, but also we have to look at it on a risk adjusted basis. So we don't want a manager that is going to take your money in a large cap growth, load up on, you know, Google, Facebook, and Amazon and swing for the fences, because obviously that creates extra risk to the portfolio. So we look for managers through different statistics that we screen. We look for a manager that consistently outperforms passive benchmarks, but also does it with less risk than the benchmark, an ideal situation, if you will. So this search was conducted with, you know, many, many managers out there. We start with performance. We look for top quartile managers. And at times, if we get too many top quartile, we look for top decile managers. And that will help narrow the list down. Then we look read about the process of the fund. How did they achieve their returns? How did they achieve their outperformance? And if it's something that makes sense, we'll bring them, you know, to the next screening phase. So we were able to find three firms that have outperformed their passive benchmark here consecutively over 1, 3, and 5 years. Two of them over 7 years. Leanne, if you could go to page 3, I believe. So this shows you, we also look for managers. So when we hire a large cap growth manager, we want to have someone that is truly large cap growth, not a growth manager that has, you know, a bunch of small cap and mid cap. We want managers that are pure to their style. And this shows that both managers, all three of these managers are that scattergram to the upper right. They are truly large cap growth in style. The next page. So this just shows performance, growth of an investment over time. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because what I'm going to ask ultimately is that if the board allows these three managers to come in and present. But what I want to show you is that, you know, that black line is the Russell 1000 Growth Index. And the green, red, and dark blue lines, I know it's a little bit difficult to see, above and beyond the large cap growth index are the managers. So what that shows is over time, these active managers outperformed their passive benchmark and generated enough return to, you know, to pay for their fee. So basically, an active manager charges a fee to you, and we want someone that's going to do it and make extra money. Otherwise, there's no point. We'll just stay passively. Next page. This is just another iteration of the managers and year by year, how they stack up against the benchmark. We don't need to spend a lot of time here. Now, this is what shows the risk and reward. We look for, typically, we want a manager to take active bets. So we want managers that are going to be different than their benchmark. And this shows that there is active risk taken. So these managers are not in the middle of the T-chart. They're up and to the right. So they take on more risk, but you're paid for the risk that you're taking. And that's the flip, depicted here, both on a 3-year and 5-year time frame. Next page, please. Okay, so this shows upside downside capture. So this is what I was talking about for, when an active manager is able to avoid, you know, some negative years. This traditionally, you want to see the manager in the upper left quadrant, and that shows the upside downside capture. So they're getting more return when there's return to be gotten, and then on the downside, they protect your money. On the downside, you can see the down capture ratios in the bottom, American Century, Slow Capital, and Alger. So they lose less money when things are bad, and they make more money when things are good. So that's an ideal situation. And that's ultimately what we look at when we look at managers and active managers. And I don't need to spend any more time here. So I guess the long and short of it is we're asking permission from the board to bring these three managers to the table next month to present to you their style, tell their story. We'll keep it brief, obviously, but these three managers have made the cut. They look strong. They have strong performance. They have strong risk characteristics. So just wanted to show you, you know, some of the quantitative inputs that go into the search when we do them. So with that being said, is that okay with you that we bring these three managers in to present these styles to the board?
Yes, this is Susan Whetstone.
Okay. Are there any questions on any of this? Okay, so I will invite these three managers in to present next month. Hopefully we can get them to present. I'll try to keep their agenda brief, their presentation brief, keep them about 15 minutes each or so. Now going on to performance, market performance. So this is through the end of September, September 30, so third quarter. Third quarter. Page 5, I believe, Leanna. So September was the worst month we've seen in a number of years. And we thought that it made sense that it was happening. We talked about it last month, that, you know, market pullbacks are normal and healthy. And as you can see, the fund was down for the month of September. October has been a little up and down, but ultimately we are higher now as of yesterday and today even. But as of September 30th, the fund was down 2.3%. The total fund was just under $212 million. Year to date, up 4.25%. Fiscal year, you know, slightly negative. But you see the rolling year, 1, 2, and 3 years, we're still compounding out at a strong rate of return. As you can see, the growth, you know, large cap growth, which we reduced our exposure in several months ago, that was worse than large cap value because a lot of the growthier names, the riskier risk on trade was more detrimental. You can see it was down to 5.47 versus large cap value was down 3.6. So there was a little bit of protection built in there. We lost less, and you can see small cap lost the least. They were down 1.7. So, you know, your small cap, your large cap value did protect the portfolio from the market turmoil that it experienced in September. International equities got beaten up a bit as well. You can see that was down 4%. Next page. Fixed income, you can see down slightly. You know, domestic fixed income is getting beaten up a bit just with the move in interest rates. It's been a tough place to be. International bonds, you see Brandywine international fixed income, that got beaten up, down 2.4%. Also, something I need to take a side note on here. So we were notified that Brandywine International Bond Fund is actually going to be liquidated in December. So October 1st, they made an announcement to their shareholders that they're basically unwinding the fund and going to be liquidating. They feel that they're, you know, they didn't really give a lot of detail. I'm still waiting for more feedback from the manager. So Brandywine is a subsidiary of Franklin Templeton. So now it's called Franklin Templeton International Bond Fund. It's being liquidated. I believe they're going to start the process in December, but it's not going to be complete until October of 2022. So we have a bit of a runway here to find another international bond manager, but I'm starting to have dialogues with managers in that space. I'm going to do a search, you know, let's handle the large cap growth first, but ultimately, just so you know, we will be looking to fill that bucket of international bonds, or global bonds, perhaps moving forward. Our fixed income exposure is already on the very, very light side just because of what's going on with interest rates. So we are on the low end of the range on international bonds, and we think that's a prudent place to be just because of where interest rates are. Moving on, we're waiting for final valuations for the quarter on a lot of these private investments, so not much to say there. If you go down to the next page, page 7, Alkion and Ballyasny actually did well. In the market turmoil, you could see for the month. So this is their long, short funds. Year to date, they're down. But for the month, when the market got a little volatile, they protected your money quite a bit. So that's a good thing. When equities were down 5.45%, they were positive to flat. So they're doing what they're, you know, under the hedge category. They are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing in the hedge category. And then obviously we have our cash for benefit payments. Also on the cash front, the city did put in $15 million. A piece of the ARC was contributed in October, maybe a week ago. So $15 million of the total piece of the ARC was put in. So I just wanted to give you folks housekeeping on that. So I don't know when the remainder of the ARC will be put in, but once it is, we will put together some ideas as to how to deploy the money into the investments. $15 million went in, and obviously $7 million went to Northern Trust to pay 2 months of benefit payments. So we're not sitting with too much cash, but, you know, wait for the remainder of the ARC and we'll look at a deployment process. Any questions on anything thus far? Okay. Ian, if you could go over to the market talk.
Derek, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Does the city provide financial consultants with a estimated schedule as to when the ARC payments are going to be made?
Not anything above and beyond what's discussed in these meetings, no.
How many ARC payments have the has been put into the fund so far?
Just the one, $15 million. And that came about a week or so ago. I think Michael fell off the call, so I can't even ask him. But it was $15 million went into SURF and $25 million went into PNF early October.
I don't think Mike's available right now, what I'm seeing here.
Yeah, I think he left the call.
Is the same thing done? Does both funds, police, fire, and SURF, receive their ARC payments at the same time?
Yeah, the same day the wire came in. It was $25 million for police and fire and $15 million for SURF is what has come in thus far.
All right, so that's the first payment of the year, the fiscal year. So is that pretty much in keeping for both funds when you have normally in the past gotten the first ARC payment?
Yes, it seemed to be last few years. It was October, then I believe end of October, early November is when the second piece, it normally comes in two tranches, usually right around the beginning of October, and then the second one comes in, you know, usually late October, early November.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I won't spend a lot of time here, just, you know, it's been a long, long meeting, and I'm sure folks have other things to do, but this is through October 14th. So obviously talked, you know, our performance report was through September 30th. So basically just wanted to talk about, you know, earnings coming in. There's been a very good, you know, most of the companies have beat on earnings estimates. So that's a good thing. The equities markets look strong. The pullback that we saw in September has seemed to have waned off. So October, it's been a little bit of bouncing around. There's been some down days in October, but thus far we are significantly higher in the month of October than we were in September. So there are a lot of reasons that are happening, but fundamentally we think the equity market still looks strong. The short-term slide seems to be coming to an end, you know, just from a technical standpoint. If you look at the next page, two pages down from now. So this shows supply chain. So a lot of the turmoil in the equity markets is because of supply chain disruption. So everybody knows if you want to buy a piece of furniture, you have to wait 3 or 4 months to get them. Automobiles, very, very low supply. What you're starting to see now is some regulation in supply chain. So we think that's a very good thing. And companies are starting to reflect that in their earnings revisions. Some of their beats, their earnings estimates. So stocks are going to be supported by this. This just shows supply chains. Next page. This just shows earnings forecasts going out into, you know, 2021 fourth quarter. So earnings estimates are ticking higher for third quarter. Most of the companies are beating earnings estimates. The majority of them are. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing for stocks. Good earnings per share growth is happening. Earnings estimates is going up. So all solid. If you look at the next page. So this looks at things technically. That top left, we really like to look at these charts because this shows when on a momentum market where there's strength in the market, it's easy to depict visually. And as you can see, what's circled there, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's what we call a sideways or bottoming moving. It's consolidation in the equity markets, which is healthy. That typically happens before another leg up. And that chart is shy of where it is now. So right now the S&P is at 45, a little over 4,500, which is higher than where it was when this chart was made a week ago, last Thursday, last Wednesday. So, you know, the markets are starting to pull back out, the equity markets. So that's a strong representation of what's going on. Markets are starting to rally a bit. I think we just come off 4 or 5 straight days of market advances. So things are looking good. We're not overly concerned for a major pullback. The one thing that obviously everybody talks about is inflation. On the next page, we're still pretty high on inflation. It's one of the Fed's largest battle is the Fed has to fight inflation with interest rate policies and fiscal policies. Even though the inflation has stuck around a bit, we still, the majority of economists out there feel that the inflation estimates will wane. It's just going to take a little bit longer to wane as the supply chain starts to normalize. A lot of prices are inflated due to inflationary pressures because of the supply chain disruption. So as that regulates, we think the inflation numbers will come down. So we're not overly concerned as of yet, but you know, from a valuation standpoint, we think equities are still strong. If you go two pages down to page 8, Leanna, I'll wrap up my comments here. This just looks at small caps. So we've kept an eye on small caps. We've overweighted your small cap exposure several months ago, and that's paid off quite well with Fuller and Thaler. They've done very, very well. And as you can see, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, small caps lost the least versus large cap growth and value. Small caps were down the least. And they're still very fairly valued. So we really still like small caps. There's been less volatility there in that asset class. They're really the best valued stocks relative to large and mid cap. So we're happy with that exposure. So in summation, equities, even though they were a little bit tumultuous in September, October slightly volatile, we think we're clearing our path for a stronger leg up in equities, both small, mid, and large cap. So we like the way the fund is positioned. We like equities over fixed income, and we think we should have a strong finish to the year. So we're not, no major concerns. We're happy that this ARK money is coming in because hopefully we could deploy it into some equity, more equity exposure and get you up to your target of 60% equities. With that being said, that concludes my comments for now, unless anybody has any questions. Comments, concerns? Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Derek. Sorry I cut you short before. That being the case, I think we've transacted all the business that's required of us today. Unless there's anything that the trustees would like to bring up at this point, I would call for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Motion made and second. Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, please indicate your trustees' choice for vote by name and recognition.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Jerry Sangal, aye. Thank you very much. See you next month.